Hey, what's up, guys? This is Zach.
And I'm Justin.
And welcome back to the Other Film Guys. Coming back at you again for episode 2 of part 3 of our PTA series.
Woo!
All right. This week, thank you so much for coming back to this part of the show. We're talking about Phantom Thread.
First off, I just want to say there's too much movement going on right now.
Too much movement?
Isn't that what he says?
Too
much movement at breakfast.
Okay, I was confused. I was like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, no one's even moving right now. All right, you caught me off guard with that one. Justin's got jokes today.
I do sometimes, occasionally.
We'll start off. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hopefully I'm coming through okay.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm doing well. I saw the Spider-Men today in theaters. I'm just going to be curt and say I didn't like it. I feel like
we'll talk about it in detail at the end, but yeah. Base opinion, you weren't really a fan.
I was not a fan of it. Yeah, I was not a fan of it. So I did that. Went out to eat with my roommate afterwards, though. Went to this burger joint called Jack's. I don't know if you've ever been.
Yeah, it's so good.
Right in front of the theater.
Yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm. So good, right?
I'd never been.
I love their buns.
They were good, yeah.
We went on a couple Saturdays ago before we went to go see Licorice Pizza. We hit up Jack's, and I was really surprised. But goddamn, it's expensive.
It's fucking crazy expensive. I was like, okay. I mean, it was good. I like their Cajun fries.
I didn't try the Cajun fries. I just had the normal ones, but I think I'll try those next time I go.
They're pretty good. So, yeah, watched Spider-Man, did that, came home, gamed a little bit, and now I'm here. That's been my day pretty much.
All right. Yeah, I went to work. I was in early this morning. I was in from 7 to 6, 11-hour shift.
Yikes.
Got to put in that overtime, baby. I
suppose so. Get that bag, fam.
Yeah, but luckily, starting next week, my schedule is actually going to be like completely different now. So I have been working like 9:30 to 6. Now I'm going to be working 7:30 to 4. So I'm shifting everything back 2 hours.
Okay.
Which I think will work out better in the long run, because then I have more time later in the day to go see movies and shit like that.
Heck yeah.
I'm going to use that because next week I'm going to Dallas to go see There Will Be Blood with friend of the show, Zach Morgeson.
At that theater, the Texas theater?
Yeah.
I'm so envious of you and him, who like just has this constant access to that theater.
I'm incredibly jealous of him, dude.
Yes. The closest thing we have that even like resembles, that's got to be like in downtown Houston, you know, good 45 minutes away from us.
We don't even have that anymore. They shut it down.
Yeah, I know that one's gone. I don't know if there's anything like it
no,
in the area.
There's not. You just got the two Regal theaters down there and then in Alamo.
Shit's gross.
Yeah, it's offensive.
Very offensive, especially when you look at, the screenings going on at the theaters around us. Like the one around us, there was like a good like 15, 18 screenings for Spider-Man and everything else like gets like 3. I think West Side Story, when I went, it was opening night for Spider-Man, and it had like 15 screenings, like I said, and legit only 3 screenings for West Side Story, and that one just came out like last week. And it's a Spielberg movie, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like a slouch.
But it doesn't compare. I think we'll talk about that in detail, maybe do that as a little bonus deal, maybe.
This is crazy.
It is crazy. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
It is
pretty depressing.
Very dooming. But we're not going to talk about that right now. Right now we're going to talk about the beauty that is Phantom Thread. Spoiler, this is still my favorite PTA movie. I just love it. Every time I watch it, I get so engulfed. I listen to the score constantly.
That's like constantly. That's the very first thing that jumps out at you is that score.
I think it is easily his best work.
It makes for fantastic writing music.
Yes, it does. Or just like thinking music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so many different tracks. House of Woodcock goes hard. That's like the main like thing, the song that you hear at the beginning and the end. And you got 4 versions of the Phantom Thread theme. Some were like softer, more orchestral, and more like stringy. And then there's like a Phantom Thread 3 is my favorite of the 4, and it's like this like epic like boom boom. like this, like with like the timpanis, and it's just like aggressive.
That whole score, like even though it's like soft, it is aggressive because it's like always there for the most part, but it's always like driving everything.
They use out of the 130 minutes, 90 minutes of score is in the movie.
That sounds about right. Yeah. There aren't too many moments where it's like just like silence. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But I dig it, honestly. It's I think it might be my favorite score in a film.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if like normally it'd be like, okay, this is like too much score, but it just sounds so nice and so melodic. It's so, and like
it's so complimentive
to
the film. That's where the difference is. Where like some movies they're using like a lot of score and it's just like, all right, come on, this is too much. But I think this like perfectly matches the tone of the movie. Like, I think like even just like the performances of the characters, like this is its own character.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It, I don't know. To me, it kind of keeps it in that, cause I feel like PTA's films, they tend to have like their own like unique pacing to them to where it's like borderline hectic, but always like within this like controlled type of chaos type of vibe.
Yeah.
And just with the tempo and the rhythm of the music, how frequently it's played throughout the film, it really, I think, definitely keeps it in like, you know, that class of what makes PTA's films unique. So, I mean, like I said, it jumps out at you like right from the very beginning, and it makes for amazing writing music. Like on Spotify, I'll be writing in, I'll just put on like general like soundtrack music or whatever, and it'll always just like float back to this specific score. And yeah, it's great.
I'm like the same way sort of with the Annihilation score.
Mm.
I like that one a lot. Especially like the, like really like the acoustic guitar bits.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I really like those. And then you get into like the,
if we're keeping it on, you know, the stream Greenwood? Of, yeah, I was going to say, if we're keeping it in that vein, he's having a big year this year.
Yeah. I mean, he did us, like a track for Licorice Pizza, cause it's mostly like a soundtrack movie. Then he scored Power of the Dog and Spencer,
which I really enjoyed both scores for both movies, but I feel like his work in Spencer really, it added like another layer to the movie that I guess I wasn't really expecting. Like,
I was gonna say the same thing, but for Power of the Dog,
like with Spencer, it definitely adds a heightened sense of anxiety that I wasn't ready for. And then I watched it, and like, and you just hear like this wild jazz that's almost like nails on a chalkboard. Like that really added something to the movie for me.
Yeah.
And same thing for like Power of the Dog too. But I guess I just wasn't really expecting it as much with Spencer for whatever reason. It just caught me more off guard there.
I mean, they're both really incredible scores. I think he's, you know, one of the best composers working right now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't know, the Power of the Dog just resonated with me more. But I mean, if I'm being honest, like I don't think either of them have much that I remember as far as like when I think about the movie, I can think about like a track that accompanied with it. Whereas for this one, I think of this movie and instantly like House of Woodcock or Phantom Thread, the theme,
you kind of can't
comes
really
into my mind.
You can't really like separate the movie from the score.
I think
in
so.
That way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know.
It's part of its DNA.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of other films like accomplish that as well as I think this movie does. Like where the score is just inseparable from the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all score too. Like there's no soundtrack or anything that I'm aware of.
No needle drops.
Yeah, no needle drops.
Well,
there you go.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I guess Auld Lang Syne plays at the New Year's section. But and that's not really a needle
drop. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if it really counts because it's, you know, diegetic.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, no, the score is incredible. Honestly, we could do a whole episode on that.
I think we honestly probably could.
Just really break it down track by track.
Do like an album or a soundtrack, like little like. That'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I know that some bands have done like commentary, like they'll do a side B and it's like commentary on all the tracks.
Interesting.
I've seen that only like once or twice though, but I think that's definitely an interesting way to go. But whatever.
Isn't he in a band, Johnny Greenwood?
Yeah. I was literally just going to talk about this. Radiohead.
Okay, there you go.
Which got their name from Talking Heads. They had a song called Radiohead, and that's how Radiohead got their name.
Now, who does Tom York play for?
Radiohead.
So they're from the same band.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
So, like, have you seen PTA's short film Anima?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The Tom York wrote and performed in that one.
Okay.
That was for like his album Anima, as far as I'm aware. I could be completely wrong. I don't have Google up in front of me.
That's interesting, though.
Yeah. Tom York, does he do scoring? I feel like he does.
I think he does, yeah.
Yeah, because he did the score for Suspiria.
Yes, and I feel like there's something else, too, that he did.
I think so, but I can't remember exactly. Radiohead, good fucking band. I've always like had like a couple songs that stick in my mind. I mean, everyone knows Creep.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of songs of theirs that I like. I really like High and Dry. That's a good song.
He's short.
Yeah, he is. They're British.
British.
British. A bottle of water.
Okay. Yeah, so I think we're in general consensus that this score goes pretty damn hard.
And I think we'll probably agree on like the performances as well.
Absolutely. Second collaboration with Daniel Day-Lewis, I believe.
Yes. Daniel Day-Lewis, Leslie Manville, and Vicky Creeps all are like the, I guess really like the only like three actors, like the main actors.
The principal actors, movie. I'd say. Yeah.
Nice, like a little bit of supporting cast, but no one that is really like, I guess like notable that I can directly think of. Although Brian Gleason does play in the movie, as well as Harriet Sansom Harris. She's in this movie too. She's Barbara Rose.
I just want to say, just I guess like if I were to put my thoughts on the movie in just like one sentence, it would be that this movie is the most passive aggressive movie I've ever seen in my life. Just the most passive aggressive. Everybody is
gaslighting
so
the movie.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody just gaslighting the fuck out of each other, bro. Like it was. But it was also kind of funny to watch as well. Like, if I thought Inherent Vice was a funny movie, honestly, this one's funnier than Inherent Vice. Like, I had a lot of fun watching it, and there were a lot of beats that made me laugh.
I don't know if it is funnier, but it is a funny movie.
I suppose just seeing, like, I don't know, just seeing how, like, passive-aggressive everybody was. And like I said at the top, you know, that, oh, there's too much movement at breakfast, like, I don't know, just like, you know, interactions like that. Like,
I think that's the second interaction that maybe that's the one of the first like dinner or breakfast sequences he has with Alma. The one at the start is the I cannot begin my day with confrontations.
Yeah. Yeah. With his girl at the time.
Which her name was, I don't even know what her name was.
She was only in it for like that scene, I think.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
I don't think she's even listed in the cast on this that I can find anyways. But yeah, he's gaslighty as fuck.
Indeed. And I don't know, like I guess I was watching it and, you know, trying to think of like what makes Vicky Creeps's character, Alma, like, I guess what makes her different from the first woman in the beginning. Probably part of it being that she's willing to like call him out a lot of times on his bullshit.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas like it seemed like, you know, if his first relationship is indicative of anything, then I feel like he's usually in relationships where like they don't really like call him out on anything. And
no, where they're pretty much just like his little like play toy, I guess.
Yeah, and when he's done, then like that's it. He doesn't really like look at you again. But with her, it was almost like she was like, you know, demanding his attention, almost like as demanding of him as he was of her in that way.
Yeah, I think it was a nice push and pull that the two found. And I think that's why they probably work out.
And they had such great chemistry together, Daniel Day-Lewis and Vicky Creeps.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed watching them just interact with each other, watching them be irate over the brutal crime of their dress. That one lady where she's just like a complete wreck and like just seeing how like offended they are by it. It was great to watch. I really enjoyed watching them on screen together.
We'll have to talk about Daniel Day-Lewis's process, I guess. So like with this movie, He didn't want to meet Vicky until they started shooting like their first scenes. But he did spend, I think, like 3 months getting to know Leslie Manville so they could like develop a little repertoire together.
That makes sense.
There's a really fun deleted scene in this movie that you can find in like the extras where it's like a breakfast scene and they have like a food fight.
Really?
It's actually like really like sweet and fun to watch. But I can definitely see why they would have cut it from the movie.
Cyril
really
and Reynolds?
Fit. Yeah.
Okay. That would not have fit at all.
No. But like, it is cute to watch them like do it in character and nice to have as a little like extra.
Sure. Yeah. I suppose so. Because there's really only like one instant where like I see them like half joke with each other, smile yeah. or whatever. And it's like almost like a throwaway moment. Like it's a moment where like Alma's just kind of watching them from a distance and yeah. she sees how loose he is with her. And, you know, I'm sure it's a moment where a lot of his relationships have like kind of come to that, where they see how much closer he is to his sister and how much more attention he's willing to give to her than
anybody else.
Right. Right.
His old so-and-so,
which even that relationship, seeing that play out, what's her name? Cyril. I found her to be an intimidating figure.
Yeah.
I could see how like she,
I think she's more intimidating than he is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And like, he knows that. Yeah. And it's kind of, I don't know, like it was kind of nice, I guess, to see that somebody does have the ability to cut him down to size. Yeah. And the fact that he's able to like see that, yes, I have no chance against this person. This person can easily cut me down to size. I don't know. It was just nice to see that like, yeah. he's not unbeatable and that he knows that, you know what I mean?
Leslie Manville, she is a very common, I think she's in like almost all of will you reach over and hand me that Secrets and Lies Blu-ray
right next to the Memories of Murder
Mike Lee.
Criterion.
Mike Lee, that's who it was.
That didn't you recently watch this?
I did, yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was. It's a really good movie. But yeah, Leslie Manville, she plays at least always a small role in his movies. She plays a social worker in that movie, Secrets and Lies. She has a good performance. Mike Lee is a really interesting filmmaker that I think I might want to talk about someday. So,
I don't know if I've seen a single film of his.
That was the first one I've seen.
Okay.
He has a really interesting process. He doesn't have a script when they start. He just has like a basic idea, and then he'll do like intense like rehearsals and improvisation to work the story out and the characters and the dialogue out with all the actors over several months, and then works out a script over that time, and then they finally have a final script, and then they shoot the movie.
Interesting. That sounds stressful to be a part of.
Yeah. I mean, that's how what's his name? We covered at least a film by a director who kind of worked like that.
Yeah, I can't think of who it was though.
I have the worst memory.
Same.
But whatever, it's not important. I also really love the cinematography in this movie.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's his first film that PTA shot himself, yeah. Right?
He didn't have Elswit on this. They had some scheduling conflicts, and so they pretty much just shot it themselves. He just had a really experienced crew who like knew what they were doing and brought in a lot of people who like already have worked together. So they already like had like this visual language established. So they, you know, all knew what they wanted. And then I think he's credited as cinematography, but he doesn't like to say that he did the cinematography for that movie.
I was watching the end credits and I didn't notice a like director of photography, Paul Thomas yeah. Anderson or anything like that.
Like, I mean, he did it, but he's not like, I'm not a cinematographer.
Right,
I'm a director
right.
and a writer.
So he doesn't shoot Licorice Pizza, right? Or does he?
He actually is credited as director of photography in Licorice Pizza. And one of the, I think, camera operators who basically just like stepped up and was, and like took on that role.
Nice. Okay.
So it's two, and it even specifically says directors of photography, Paul Thomas Anderson. And I feel so terrible, but I forgot his name. I'll make sure I have it for the
next
Licorice
week. Yeah,
Pizza episode.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I mean, it was an automatic standout to me. Like, I don't know, yeah. If I'm trying to think of, like, it just looked so, it looked different from a lot of, his previous stuff in a way that I can't really describe to you. Like, there was such depth to every shot, and it was very, like, it's very, like, graceful and, like, clean, which is kind of reflective of, you know, Reynolds' life in general, just kind of this, like, nice and tidy, routine-based life. And I don't know, it was just really great to watch. I really enjoyed watching the driving.
Yes, I was going to say, like, I remember the first time I watched it, I saw those car shots there. They happened pretty early on, and I'm like, holy shit, I don't think I've ever seen, like, a driving shot that looks this good.
Yeah, I was sitting there, like, trying to figure out, like, how did he do this? It was almost like it was, like, on, like, an antenna.
You know what I'm saying? I think they had a camera rig attached to it. It was it's a maroon 1955 Bristol 405.
Nice. It looked amazing. It made me think of, like, you know, like, really, like, old school movies where, like, people are driving, you know, whatever. And it just looked really great. I was like, wow, I want to go driving now.
Yeah. And then those shots that are, like, sort of, like, coastal where you can see the water and they're walking. Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of shots like that where, like, the characters are kind of, like, superimposed over, like, you know, the environment and the landscape. Like, there's a beautiful shot later in the movie. It's after Reynolds and Alma get married. They're on, like, a skiing trip or whatever. And she's going to go do this excursion on her own with this group of people. And he stays behind. And there's a shot of him, like, in the foreground facing away from the camera. And in the background, it's, like, this giant fucking glacier. And it was remarkable to see that and just see, you know, the implications behind that shot. It was amazing.
I honestly always forget about that section of the movie, like the
I forgot they got the
honeymoon
married.
Part.
Yeah.
And I've seen this movie I don't know how many times. I'll literally just, like, put it on during work because this is one of the few movies that I can have on in the background and I know exactly what's happening. Mm. I rewatched it for the podcast. I wanted to have it fresh in my mind. I watched it at work because I had, like, the first, like, 2.5 hours of my work, I didn't get a single call. Nice. So I was just like, I'm going to pop in the movie. That's how I also watched Secrets and Lies, but that one did get interrupted a couple of times, which kind of sucked, but.
Yeah. I knew you were always a big fan of this movie.
The first time I watched this, it was on this iPad that we're recording with. And it was on a road trip up to Montana. I downloaded several movies. I don't remember what all I watched. I know I rewatched Pulp Fiction, and I watched this. I can't remember what else I watched, though. But this was definitely the standout. Like, as soon as I watched this movie, I finished it, and I was like, I'm going to be thinking about this for a long, long time.
It's very engrossing. Like, it, I was watching it and I don't know. I was like, okay, how much time I got left? And, like, it was like, I've already seen, like, an hour and a half of it.
It flows by.
I was like, wow. Like, yeah. I was, like, really thrown off guard by how much I had seen already. I was like, wow, that really flew.
Scarlett's been wrapping her Christmas presents all today. She had today off.
Oh, that's nice. I ain't wrapping shit. Everybody shit. Getting shit in the fucking gift bag.
I don't know how to wrap.
YouTube.
I ain't got no flow.
I don't either. My shit looks disgusting when I'm done rapping, but it's wrapped.
That was a play on words.
I didn't hear it. It went right over my brain.
Sorry, I do that all the time. What were we talking about? Oh, this movie flows really nicely.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very well edited.
It's a very smooth movie.
Yeah. I don't remember who edited it. Let me see. Edited by Dylan Tichenor, who's an English editor, it looks like. No, American. I am stupid. Also was an editor for Robert Altman. Edited The Player and Shortcuts, Jazz 34. Edited Heart 8, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Unbreakable, Royal Tenenbaums, the original series of Unfortunate Events, Brokeback Mountain, There Will Be Blood, Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, Doubt, Whip It, The Town, Zero Dark Thirty, Phantom Thread, Eternals, and Antlers.
That's a resume right there.
That is a fucking resume. Wow.
Dang, okay. A couple of bangers under his belt, too.
Yeah, he is nominated for 2 Academy Awards, 2 BAFTAs, and 4 Eddie Awards, which I don't know what those are. Eddie Awards. I'm assuming it has something to do with editing.
Editing, yeah.
But yeah, I'm really good editing in this one.
For sure.
I was a big fan.
Yeah, it's very well paced. Much better paced than, you know, I'm sure you can pick up on this by now, but much better paced than Inherent Vice.
Yeah, definitely.
I would say much like easier, much smoother watch. And even though they're like very different, like in terms of like, you know, their subjects and their context or whatever, like, I don't know, like I was just much more like, I was much more pulled in to this story. And it's also like, it's also a lot smaller than Inherent Vice and a lot of his movies
as
well.
Incredibly smaller scale. I mean, this is, you know, one of the few ones that, few movies that is literally just based mostly on, you know, 3 people, pretty much 1 location.
Pretty much all in the house.
Yeah.
House of Woodcock. Yeah. They leave for, you know, that woman's wedding. And
Barbara Rose.
Yeah. And also for the New Year's party.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Those are the only... And the ski resort, whatever. I guess. Yeah.
He goes to his cabin. But, I mean, like, there's small moments in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, it is large... like, 90% in that house.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
You know how they came up with Reynolds Woodcock's name?
I don't. Also, like, top... Well, it was Daniel Day-Lewis, right?
He suggested Daniel Day-Lewis, yeah. He made it up as a joke. And PTA was... He just said he could not stop laughing after he heard that. He broke into tears.
Yeah, I started laughing when I first heard it in the movie because it's, like, one of his, like, workers or somebody that says it, and you're like, what'd you just call him?
And then it's so funny when Alma is, like, after Barbara Rose has her, like, little, like, event.
Yeah.
At her wedding, she's like, she will not be housed by the House of Woodcock.
I mean, pretty good moment. Strong moment.
I can't do a Vicky Creeps accent.
Not many people can, because she delivered it with such, like, intensity, delivered that line, and it was like, yeah, she, like, fucking meant that. And yeah, I forgot what we were initially talking about, but...
The house.
The house, yes. Yeah, most of it's in the house. And... A lot of it's like him bedridden, you know, in his room. And yeah, the house is a major player in the movie for sure. Yeah. Almost you could say its own character as well.
Oh, definitely. I remember from like interviews that the house was really small. They actually had a tough time like actually like filming in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't build any sets for this movie. Everything was practical pretty much.
Nice. It's also smaller, like, you know, in terms of like scope and vision, like there are less, you know, like... people involved, less storylines that, you know, they're going down. Really, it's just, you know, the relationship between Reynolds and Alma. Also kind of going on in the background but kind of teetering in the foreground is this subplot of Reynolds and his mother, which seems to be like a driving force behind like a lot of what he does.
It's one of those movies where PTA is showing off his mommy issues.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, you know, you could really like break
same
this down.
Boogie Nights.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you could really like get into this and break it down and really see, like, you know, the psychology behind it.
Alma is even like, she's like, wow, you really love your mom.
Yeah. It was very interesting to watch, and yeah, I have to watch it again. But that's definitely something that it's, you know, and it's not like mentioned all the time throughout the movie. It's mentioned like when they meet, of course, right? And she starts to learn about his mom, and she can tell as well as the audience the impact that she had on him and still does even after she's passed. We see her when he's hallucinating, when he's sick.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like she just like pops in and out every now and then, but like her presence is like almost always there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I honestly love that part. I kind of wish that it was focused on a little bit more.
I like it. I like how it's like just, you know, hinted at.
I do. I like how, you know, like when she shows up as a hallucination when he gets sick for the first time, after he gets poisoned for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
She
scared the hell out of me.
That's my neighbor. Dog's fucking annoying as hell.
I would be annoyed too.
When we first moved in, he would literally like not stop howling and howling. Aww, and dang. Howling.
That's tough. That makes me feel bad, because remember me telling you about like the noise complaints that like I'm pretty sure it's Astro that they're hearing, and like her like just being excited and running around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they probably fucking hate us. But that's why we pay pet rent, bitch. You live in a pet friendly complex.
Yep. We have to start paying pet rent.
I'm so sorry. They really got you, bro.
I know. fuck.
I'm still like curious as to like how.
During like a, they did an inspection or something. I don't know. But what I was getting onto about is in that scene with the hallucination, there's a line that like really like sticks, and he's like, you're always watching over me, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's such a small thing, but I really love that.
Yeah, for sure.
It tells you so much about who he really is when he's like sick. Cause like when someone's sick, that's when they're at their fucking like, you know, when they're like so much like bedridden that like they could possibly die, that's when like everything sort of just like spills out.
And, yeah.
Like, they're like, they become like reminiscent of their life and, you know, all the grief and regret. And I think it's after that that he decides that he wants to marry Alma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After she takes care of him that first time.
Apparently, I was reading the initial idea for the movie came after PTA had gotten sick. And as Maya Rudolph was taking care of him, he was like, I don't think I ever saw her where she like just so obviously loved me and cared for me so much than when she was helping take care of me when I was sick.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I think they're a lovely couple.
I don't know if I've ever seen them together, like in interviews or anything.
I think in the one interview I saw where they were both together for Inherent Vice, they like sat like a few seats apart. I think maybe they do that intentionally.
Mm-hmm. They were together at that time.
Oh yeah. Right? They've been together for a long time.
Okay.
Do you think that he helps her go over her lines for
Big Mouth?
For Big Mouth.
I hope so. That would be absolutely like absolutely he, hilarious
like if,
to
like
watch.
If he played the hormone monster.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I would absolutely love to see that. Heck yeah. Fuck. I forgot what we were talking about. Oh yeah, her being with him. Yeah. I didn't realize they had been together that long. I didn't know they had a daughter until kids. I saw that. Yeah, I didn't know they had kids until I saw that one of them's in Licorice Pizza.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
When we were watching, I went over to Scarlett and I was like, that's PTA's kid.
I do the same thing. I've been doing the same thing with Azul with Cooper Hoffman.
Yeah.
I've been like, oh, that's Philip Seymour Hoffman's son. Oh. I just can't help but think that every time I see him.
Yeah, so. I can't wait to talk about that movie. I'm actually going to be talking about that soon with Zach as well.
Oh, okay, nice.
For a little thing he's got going on.
Oh, nice. Shout out.
I don't know when that'll come out, but I'm sure we'll tweet about it.
Very nice.
Yep. I don't know how much I can really just talk about this movie other than just saying how much I love it.
Right. I'm trying to think as well. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think we've talked about everything that stands out to us. We've talked about the score. I mean, you can't say enough about it. How gorgeous the movie looks. Named a few shots, specific shots that stood out to us. The house, talked about the importance of the house, his mother, the role that she plays on him, even after her passing. We could talk a little bit about Cyril, I guess, how she kind of like takes on that motherly role in a way, even though she's much colder.
Yeah, I think. Mean, they're definitely like pretty similar in age, but she is definitely like, you know, like the strict mom that I think he was like used to his whole life, probably.
I would say
so she helps like keep him honest with his work, I guess, maybe.
I mean, would you call her, would caretaker be like the correct term?
I think so.
Which like, you know, maybe that's why that has a reason. That's part of the reason why there's so much tension, you know, once Alma comes, because then that caretaker role kind of starts to like float away from Cyril and goes into Alma's hands, which gives Alma some power. You know what I'm saying? Separates Cyril from Reynolds. It's almost kind of painful to watch them like when they're out in public and eating or whatever and seeing like the distance that's between them. Literally and figuratively.
They went out to that restaurant and she thought it was just gonna be them, and then the waiters pull up a different table.
Yeah, it's so loud too. Down.
Yeah. And then he's just like talking with her about I think like I think about Barbara Rose.
And they like, he like sits like right next to her too. And yeah. Like there's like, it's almost like there's like a mountain like, of space between, yeah, between Alma and Reynolds. It's like, damn, like she like, she third wheeling here.
Yeah. No, you know? For, no, seriously. And she's just like, oh, okay. I guess I'm just here for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, wow. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, obviously that's something he's done to, you know, probably most of the people, oh, yeah. Everybody he's been in a relationship with.
But I think Alma, you know, eventually comes out to like, I'm not going to live my life like this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the important one in this relationship.
And like, she kind of, you know, his routine is, his life is obviously based on just like one big routine. Yeah. And so the fact that she just kind of comes in and like forces her way into that routine and doesn't make things so, you know, cut and dry or whatever, it makes for this like quiet, contained, messy chaos, but it's still like elegant and like nice to look at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I always describe PTA's movies as like, you know, chaotic and like their intensity and chaos, you know, depends on the subject and the context or whatever. And I feel like this movie is, you know, one of those more quietly chaotic movies of his.
Definitely.
Because it's very like, it's very messy and very chaotic. So very on brand for him, I would
say.
There's
always a lot happening.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's also just like, yeah, like you said, like just, it's so gentle.
Yeah, right, right. And it's very like, it's very, very like precise with it as well. And like Cyril, you know, she's got some lines where she like delivers them with like, you know, it's like just a little stab with a dagger type of thing, especially yeah. like whenever they're like kind of arguing and like he tells her to shut up and she's like, I will literally put you on the ground, mate. Fight me.
And, yeah. I think probably one of my favorite scenes, it's not between, like, I guess it is sort of also between Reynolds and Cyril. After, like they're talking and then Alma shows up behind him in the doorway.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And then dude, she I was says, like, no. It's up to her satisfaction. She's like, I don't give a fuck about her satisfaction.
Yeah, that was painful to watch. I was like, no. And I was like, oh, wait, he actually doesn't fucking care.
He doesn't. And like, he gets so upset about chic.
I, too, want to know what this word means, though.
Just in fashion, stylish.
Okay. Mainstream?
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm.
Which is like, is sort of like that the movie is kind of also saying something about like, you know, like he's so like stuck in his like traditional ways of making this stuff that he's not keeping up with the trends. And so mm-hmm. that's resulting in like the fall of the House of Woodcock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there was also a deleted scene where they have little kitty kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we see them have a kid later on, like yeah. they're like in a carriage or whatever.
Yeah, they have the carriage, and they I think they drop it off to Cyril or something like that. And,
yeah,
but like there's one where you like see like the baby like running around like the house and stuff like that. It's
interesting, cute. Interesting. I really love the close-ups that are done of Cyril where she's like center framed,
yeah.
and she's looking like right at the camera. Very like intimidating look from her.
Yeah, and a lot of influence from like Jonathan Demme movies.
I'm sure you've seen it at the end of the credits. It says like for Jonathan Demme.
Yes, because he passed away on the day that they finished filming.
I figured he passed that year. Yeah, yeah.
The day that they finished filming, which like he was one of like the greatest inspirations for PTA. He was PTA was hired as a backup director on one of Altman's movies. Mm. I don't remember which one, but so I mean they definitely had a relationship, I think, and it must have been like a hard thing for PDA to go through and dedicated the movie to him for it.
Nice. It was beautiful. Especially those close-ups, like I said. And I mean the movie in general is just beautiful. Even, you know, of course, you know, costume design had to be on point for a movie like this. And, you know, the dresses I thought were beautiful. The production designing the sets were very intricate, very specific.
Yeah.
It was all, you could tell it was one of those movies where like there's like thought behind everything that is in this frame right now and everything that's like outside of it. And I mean, I will always appreciate that.
I'm trying to see. It was nominated for for 6 Academy Awards. It did win one. I think it won costume design, I want to say.
Would not surprise me. They got some banging outfits. I like the way Reynolds dresses. I liked watching him get dressed at the very beginning of the movie. Perfect tone setter for who he is as a person.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, it says so much just in like with a few cuts and like probably like a minute worth of runtime right there. He didn't say a damn thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mark Bridges did win Best Costume Design for this. Johnny Greenwood was nominated for Best Score. Leslie Manville for Best Supporting Actress. Best Actor Daniel Day-Lewis. Best Director. And Best Picture.
Love it.
But it lost to... What won Best Picture that year? Oh, that was the year The Shape of Water won.
I like The Shape of Water.
Grinding Nemo.
Tis good fun.
Have you seen the new Del Toro yet?
I've not, no.
Okay. It was fine. Good movie.
Good movie.
I think I gave it like a 7. Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Final opinions?
Let's do it.
All right. I said it at the top. This is one of my favorite PTA. No, this is my favorite PTA movie. And it is also one of my favorite movies, just in general. It's usually always in that top 4. So it's clear to me, I think clear to everyone else, this is a 5 out of 5 for me.
I think I'm right there with you. I watched this the first time a few years ago, and like I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It didn't stick with me as much as it has this time around. And I don't. It's always good watching something or doing something after taking a step back from it for a certain amount of time. You just have, you know, kind of a whole unique perspective on it. And that's, you know, kind of what happened to me this time around. I found it to be a very funny movie. I was having so much fun watching it. I don't know if that's weird of me to say, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's beautiful to look at. Can't rave enough about the score. So, you know, I'm going to say it's like, it's got to be tier 1 class S PTA, I'm going to say. Right up there with his greats.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, 5 out of 5.
Awesome.
Right there.
Time to get into some bad reviews, and I don't think we talked about it, but yeah, this is the last movie that we'll get Daniel Day-Lewis in, so it also gave us that.
Love it.
All right, so this one comes from Diego. It's a half-star review for some bad reviews that we're getting into. I don't think I even segued us into that. Diego says, I can't think of anything positive to say about this movie. The photography has grain. The voices are heard as if they were in the background. And the story, what to say about the story?
Shut up.
I wouldn't know what to say about the story either, because it tells absolutely nothing, at least nothing interesting.
Shut up.
If there was an award for the most boring movie, the chances of this one winning would be very high.
Shut up.
The only salvageable thing
why are you still going?
in the movie is Daniel Day-Lewis. Not recommended for people who do not want to lose 2 hours of their life. As soon as I saw them say the photography has grain, I was like, this is about to be the stupidest fucking review I've ever heard in my entire life.
You lost me as soon as you said that. So,
Diego, what the fuck?
Okay. SAR. S-A-U-R, SAR. Half a star for the pretty dresses, but girl, fuck this movie for being so boring. I didn't find it boring.
Damn, you're SAR annoying, bitch.
Indubitably. I'm sorry you're boring, you know? And I'm sorry if people being extremely passive-aggressive is not funny to you, because I feel like that's a very, like, real-life thing, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, there are so many, like, little nuances to that, and I'm sorry you just don't fucking care to, like, look a little deeper.
Yeah. Look inward.
That kind of triggered me for a second. All right. Next review.
All right. Let's see. Pogeyman 666, half-star review. My favorite movie of all time is the same length and 10 times better. Just looking on their favorites, I'm going to guess they're talking about It's a Wonderful Life, which I have not seen.
Okay. Let me see. Jules, half star. They say, this is one of those movies where you'll fall asleep 3 times, and for some reason, every time you wake up, the same thing is happening, but it's been an hour between each sleep. So the general complaint seems to be that people find it boring.
It's not boring, though. Like, there's always something. I don't know. All right.
I don't know what people like anymore.
I don't. Because I see some of the worst fucking takes these days. Like, worse than they've ever been.
I know. Yeah, it's like, I thought that was just me. But, like, yo, like, film criticism and film literacy, like, just, like, in the fucking trash.
Yeah. I was going to try and find a good review, but Letterboxd isn't loading for me.
It's not loading for me either.
Oh, shit.
Dang.
All right.
Oh, wait, hold on. Wait.
Oh, is it working now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Must have had a little hiccup. Let me close the app real quick and try again.
I'll read this one then. Okay, so this one is 4.5 stars from Iana Murray.
Oh, Iana. I love her.
Yes. She quotes Reynolds' line towards the end, "Kiss me, my girl, before I'm sick," which is a fantastic line.
Yeah.
I would only hope to write
that
something.
That was my first review.
I would only hope to write something as elegant and swooning and beautiful and romantic as that. So she quotes that. She goes on to say, "Phantom Thread is like lighting a 100-meter fuse of an entire barrel of dynamite, a thrilling slow burn to an explosive climax that only thrills you even more. So peculiar that a story like this can even exist, one that can make you simultaneously squirm in your seat and smile from ear to ear." Pausing that, a moment that made me smile was right after they took the dress from Barbara Rose. And I forget where they are, but like they're just so obviously like in love with each other, and like they start kissing, and like
that's at Barbara Rose's like reception for her wedding.
So gorgeous to look at. Okay, continuing, the experience of watching Phantom Thread is basically a parallel to what Reynolds goes through in that oh so delectable finale. It's so wrong, but you just want to keep coming back for more. End.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Letterboxd user Wes, 5-star review. "My mom said a few days ago that the only time that I seem happy is when I'm at the movie theater. And that's absolutely true when films are as perfect as this exist." I don't think I can agree more.
Yes, it is. It's quite close to perfect, I would say.
I think, honestly, my favorite theatrical experience is when I got to see this at an Alamo Drafthouse for one of their tea time screenings.
Yeah.
They brought 3 servings of tea and 2 snacks that like correlated with the movie.
That's another thing that I really liked about the movie is the food.
Oh my God.
And like the specificity of the food.
I wanted to jump in and get whatever they were eating.
Yes. Yeah. It always looked, it looked very delectable, I guess is the right word. But yeah, for sure.
All right. So time to talk about movies that we've been watching in between episodes. I will go ahead and start. Started off rewatching The Amazing Spider-Man 2 because Scarlett hadn't seen it. And yeah, that happened. So, you know what? I will say it was better than I remember it being.
Andrew Garfield was not a bad Spider-Man.
No, it's just, you know, they didn't really have good material to work with.
That, yes. Yeah, I hear that.
I honestly think that if they maybe made a third one with like a different director, it could have been up there. But no, Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2 are bottom tier Spider-Man movies for me.
I feel that.
Although the suit from Amazing Spider-Man 2 is my favorite Spider-Man suit of all time.
Okay.
It really is the best, and it's the last practical suit that we ever got. So it's got that little bit of credit for me.
Okay.
Then the next day I went to the first day premiere of Spider-Man No Way Home. What I will say is that it was very fun to see in a crowd, just like Endgame was. We talked about this a little bit beforehand. I think that's honestly the reason why it's rated so high for me. It's rated a 3.5, but I honestly expect that once I see it again, once it's like died down a little bit, that will probably go down. Because there were points even in the movie where I was thinking like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like some of those interactions between like, especially like the villains.
Yes.
Especially fucking Lizard.
Yes. I was literally thinking of like, the Lizard while you were talking.
Like when he was talking to fucking Electro and he was like, "But Max, you used to be so, you had a, your teeth were messed up and your hair and shit like that." And it's like, it was so fucking, But I loved all the Spider-Man stuff, like the 3 Spider-Men. Once it got like the scenes of them interacting, that was pure bliss. And I will say, I think that's the only thing that the film really gets from
saving grace.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a really fun movie for what it was worth. And but my opinions will probably change once I rewatch it.
I mean, the average rating is still a fucking 5 stars.
It is not deserving of. Like, people are saying, like, Tom Holland deserves an Oscar for this. Like, have you not seen any other movie this year? Like, any other movie? Any other movie? Any movie?
Just about fell out of my chair.
Anyways. We'll talk about it more once you get to your part of this section, so we'll cap it there for that. Then I got to see Nightmare Alley in theaters. I liked that movie. It was good. My review of it was Alexa, play What Goes Around Comes Around by Justin Timberlake. Nice. And when you watch the movie, you'll find out exactly what I mean. I do recommend seeing it in theaters because that was awesome. Then I watch what is my number 2 movie of the year so far. I still have a few more movies to go before I can, like, solidify my list, I think. But I think my number 1 and 2 are pretty cemented. And my number 2 is, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Ryosuke Hamaguchi, Drive My Car.
What a picture.
What a picture. I just...
What a picture.
I've talked about it before, but... and this isn't my main reason for liking the movie, but I really love awesome cars in movies. Like I was talking about this, Reynolds drives a Bristol 405. In that movie, he drives a 1982 Saab 900 Turbo S. I had to remember a little bit. And it's a really nice car. Really cool. It's Swedish made.
I'm sure you've told me, but what's your number 1 movie then? If that's number 2?
I don't think we'll talk about it yet because we're gonna do the year wrap up.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
But we'll get. I'll tell you off screen, off camera, off mic.
Yeah.
And I just really loved that what this movie like had to say about like grief, or not necessarily grief, but like regret and like self acceptance. And the performances were incredible. I do not remember the main actor's name, but he's incredible. He was really good in. Kiyoshi Kurosawa's film Creepy, which is a really good movie. I don't think I'll have much more to say right now, because I know you're going to talk about it too. So I'll move on. let's see. Then I rewatched Phantom Thread for the podcast, and then Mike Lee's Secrets and Lies, which has so many scenes in it that painfully remind me of like real life, sort of, because his movies are sort of like Noah Baumbach, where they're like, it kind of feels like there's just like a camera in a room and you're just like along for the like ride of,
they're like
the
very characters. Realistic type, yeah. Of thing.
And there's like this one scene in the diner, which is the cover for the Criterion, which literally just fucking like broke my heart when I watched it. And It does a really good job of like putting it back together and, you know, bringing you along for the ride of the movie and the emotional journey of these characters and the growth that some of them go through. And I 100% recommend watching this movie. It's on HBO Max because it's part of the Criterion Collection and the channel. So a lot of their movies are on HBO Max. So I definitely recommend checking out. And that's everything I watched.
Nice. You've seen more than I have. One could say I've seen the same movie twice, because the very first movie I watched after we watched Inherent Vice was I watched the 1961 West Side Story. Good piece of, you know, cinema history. Whatever well-meaning message it wants to get across, it completely fails with, you know, the blatant brown-facing that goes on in that movie. Yeah, I just like that. And it's so like painfully obvious too. Like it, like the lead, one of the lead actors is, you know, just like, you can tell like fucking like spray tan type vibes. Like
gross.
Yeah. And he's got this.
That one, Best Picture though, right?
I think it did.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I'm sure people were eating that shit up back when it came out. But I mean, yeah, it was nice to look at. Like it was so like vibrant in its colors and like literally would put so many movies today to like absolute shame. So it was great to look at. There were a bunch of visuals that really like touched me. The dancing was thoughtful. I enjoyed watching them. And I mean, I really loved Rita Moreno's Anita. I, you know, vibed with more with her character than I did with seeing the two lead actors. I was just more interested in watching her than them. And, you know, really all I can say is, you know, just a good piece of cinema history. And it was something to watch to prepare me for Spielberg's West Side Story, which I watched the next day. That one, I really enjoyed that one. No brown facing in that one, thankfully. But
it does have Ansel Elgort.
It does. Yeah, it does have its own, you know. Yeah. But again, something else that happened was, like, again, I found myself gravitating towards whoever it was that played Anita in that one. And I was...
Rachel Zegler?
No, she plays...
I don't know the characters. I haven't seen the movie, I haven't seen the original in a long, long time.
Well, Rachel Zegler, she plays like the lead actress.
Okay.
Ansel's love interest.
Oh, are you talking about the one? Is she the one that dances like in the yellow dress?
Yeah, she does. Yeah, there is a scene where she dances in a yellow dress.
I've seen a lot of talk about that scene.
Ariana
and that actress.
Ariana DeBose? DeBose? Something. That
DeBose. Yeah.
But I was definitely, like, again, gravitating towards this Anita role, and I was, and this time she's played by an actual, her man is played by an actual Latino, who I also was a big fan of. His name is David Alvarez. Shout out, Alvarez gang. I really enjoyed watching them. You know, I wasn't super invested in Rachel Zegler and Ansel's, you know, love affair, whatever you want to call it. But the movie was spectacular to look at. It sounded really good. I will forever appreciate a good sounding movie.
Yes.
And just hearing, I think
we talked about that last week.
Yeah, and just hearing the dresses just swoosh while, you know, the girls would swing, and hearing like the feet tap on the floor, and hearing, you know, just like the sounds of like people catching things, like that sound design to me is like, you know, like in tier one, like most important things that go into making a movie excellent. And I mean, Spielberg knows what he's doing. You know, he's a legend through and through. So I really enjoyed the remake of West Side Story. I thought it was good. I had fun watching it. And then I watched the best movie of the year, without a doubt, Drive My Car.
Which means we'll potentially talk about it.
Yes. I look forward to watching it a second time. This is a movie that the credits rolled, and like and it doesn't even like end on like a very like super remorseful note, but it ended and like I just like broke down. Like it was, there was such like weight behind this whole movie, and it was so like it was the perfect combination of like vibe cinema without it being like aimless or too aimless to where it's like, okay, guys are just like walking around or whatever. Like there was stuff happening to where, like, you know, there was a semblance of a plot that was being driven. But I mean, just, I can't speak enough to, you know, just how powerful this movie was for me. It reminded me of a positive review I read last week for Inherent Vice from Jordane Searles, when she called Inherent Vice, what'd she say? She called it sexy without even trying.
Oh, yeah.
That makes me think of 100%. This movie. Sexy without even trying.
Yes.
Straight up. Both in physicality with the actors, full of good looking people, this Drive My Car. And just, you know, just the way it operates, it's easily my favorite movie of the year. I told myself that I was going to wait to see this one, Matrix, which we're seeing pretty soon.
Yeah.
And Licorice Pizza, and maybe Nightmare Alley, but those were my three where I was like, I'm going to wait and see what those look like before I make a top 10 of the year. And Matrix and Licorice Pizza and Nightmare Alley, they have to like really, really blow me away to beat this movie, man.
Which, seeing Licorice Pizza, I don't think that it'll top this for you, but
I, you know, we'll, I, like I said, it's going to take a lot, because this movie, like, yeah, I watched it and it was like, all right, yep, instant fucking 5 stars, period. So I think I know like what my two favorite movies of the year are. Of course, got to watch those other ones, but this was, Yeah, I can say without a doubt.
My I'm hyped favorite for Matrix. Movie of the we'll year. Have seen it by the time this comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, right.
And the world will have changed.
Indeed. But yeah, the best movie of 2021, Drive My Car. And that's it. I watched Phantom Thread last night. Oh, no, that's not true. I watched Spider-Man today. Yeah.
Yeah.
That shit was bad. That shit was gross. I did not like it. I'm not trying to hate on anybody that liked the movie. Like, if you liked it, that's fine, you know. But I also have the right to fucking dislike it.
Yeah. No, 100%.
That is exactly what I'm doing. I thought it was pretty shit up until the Spider-Men get together. It's just like, I don't know, it just felt so like fucking like nostalgia bait. Like,
I will say, I think it did fly by pretty well.
I guess.
For me anyways.
For me, towards the end, it started to drag some. But yeah, I was not into it. It wasn't, you know.
Willem, though.
Willem, yeah, MVP.
And
Willem, he was the foe. Alfred. Willem was the foe, indeed. And yeah, like, he was great. Alfred was okay. I wish he had better material to work with.
I think he did a good job with what they gave him.
I think so too. I just wish he was given better. And like, the movie just, I don't know, like, I abhorred the writing. I just, it wasn't, you know, I didn't find it to be very challenging, or a lot of times I didn't think it was very funny. Sometimes it would be funny, but I just wasn't really jiving with it.
Yeah. Fair points. These are all fair points, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I think, you know, we talked about it earlier. Crowd influence, I feel like, has a big, big influence on like how people are feeling about the movie. I saw it with an okay crowd. Nobody was, bro. Have you seen the videos of like people like?
That's how it was in our screen,
bro. Like, it's the fucking World Cup.
That's how it was. But the most annoying part about it is that I missed out on like important pieces of dialogue
because motherfuckers are yelling.
Yeah, like, I could not fucking hear what they were saying if I even like cupped my ears and was trying to, because I can't even imagine him being another one of the theaters, because I bet like that fucking shit drowned the whole like building out.
Dude, I mean, I don't know. It's cool. I mean, it's cool to have like audiences be on board and like enjoy something like that.
Yeah,
but I just don't think it was that good enough to warrant that. Yeah,
I mean, it's just it was the same thing. We talked about it before we started recording, the Endgame thing, where that movie was heavily influenced by the crowd reaction and the emotional thing that you get there. Rewatching it at home, I felt nothing. And I very much expect that same thing will happen when I rewatch this. But I still feel shit when I watch Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2.
Okay, see, so look. While I was watching the movie, most of what I was thinking about was how I would much rather have been watching Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man movies instead of this one that I was watching right now. And I was also thinking about our podcast. Like, I you know, those were that's where my brain was going while watching the movie. And Tobey Maguire looked old, man.
Yeah, honestly, and this isn't necessarily his fault, but his hair was throwing me off the whole time.
Why? You didn't like it?
Just like the hairline.
Hmm.
I'm not saying like it negatively influences the movie or his part. It was weird because like his Spider-Man like has like the fuller head, and I get that it's supposed to be like an older Spider-Man, like an older version of him too. I thought it was just weird to see him like that. Like, that's not how I remember Tobey Maguire looking, but
I saw him and I was like, I deadass would rather be watching the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans right now.
Yeah.
And like, I like watching all three of them interact together though. Especially when they're all suited up.
Yeah. Like that, that's nice. That scene where they like, once like the final battle starts and they go and they group up, they're like, this isn't working. And like that interaction between them there.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Yeah. Right. Right. And honestly, like, to me, it was like most of the people, for me, it was like, I feel like most people are here
for that.
For that, yes.
That's what I was about to say, is that like the whole movie does not matter because everything is leading up to that moment right there. Yeah.
Like, there's nothing, there's no like surprise going on. There's no, I don't know.
My thing with them showing up and people losing their shit is like, guys, we all knew this was happening for like 2 years. Dude,
yes.
Like, I get that it's awesome to see, but like, we all knew. Everybody knew. The only thing that did surprise me was when Matt Murdock showed up for 30 seconds.
Yeah, literally.
That would have been way more interesting and cool to have fucking Daredevil be in the shit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that it would have been, you know, something that people wouldn't have expected.
They
and
just
like,
they just threw a fucking image of Kingpin in the Hawkeye series, gave us 30 seconds of Daredevil in this movie, called it a day. I have not seen episode 6 of Hawkeye as of this recording, so we could get more Daredevil Hawkeye shit.
I will say, I am excited for the Doctor Strange movie.
Oh my god, yeah.
I think that's going to be good.
Which, from the trailer that plays after the movie, mm-hmm. you got to watch What If. Well, yeah, I guess you don't got it, but it is implementing a version of Doctor Strange from that series.
Okay, nice.
Which, the series
directed by Sam Raimi.
Yes.
Multiverse of Madness.
Raimi's directing it, which I'm super excited for.
I already know it's going to be way more unique and interesting than this fucking whatever the fuck I just watched.
We're getting.
Yes.
What does Reynolds say in this movie?
It's just not very good, is it?
No. Well, that and I told you, no more slodgy things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's stodgy.
Stodgy.
So, yeah, yes, stodgy. Yeah. I like mine better.
Yeah.
It's just not very good, is it? And then pass out.
Like, nice work, but it's not really good, is it?
It wasn't good. I'm sorry to those who enjoyed the movie. There's nothing wrong with you enjoying the movie. Like what you like. I just did not fucking like it.
Yep. And that's okay.
That is okay.
What's also okay is this episode being over.
Is that okay?
It's not. But it has to end sometime.
We'll be back next week.
We will. We'll be back next week talking about Licorice Pizza coming out in theaters this weekend. I'm excited.
I am too. Yeah.
You can, in advance, you can read my review on theotherfilmguys.com.
This is true.
Spoiler free. Or you can read it afterwards. And you can always join us back here next week for our discussion on that. Last episode of 2021. So... it'll come out on the very last day of 2021. So be there
New or Year's
be
Eve?
Square. New Year's Eve, yep.
Nice. Okay, bet.
Hey, guys. Editing Zach here. Just to include a little message, I want to thank you guys again for listening to The Other Film Guys. And I wanted to also plug in here, make sure you rate us everywhere that you listen to your podcasts, including Spotify, which is new. They just introduced ratings, which is pretty awesome, as well as leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps people find us and... helps give us feedback so we know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. Thank you guys so much, and back to the ending of the show. So thank you again so much for everyone for coming to listen to this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach us on social media at Other Film Guys, or me personally at Living Mediocre.
And I'm at Rocketman3, just replace that O with a 0.
And again, we will see you guys next week. Go out, be safe, Merry Christmas. And if you don't come back next week, Happy New Year.
Be safe, y'all. Happy holidays.
Get your booster,
please.